Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. I'm sort of worn out after all that. Today we are going to be talking about the poetry of Proverbs. Now, this is Bible study, and it is part of what we might call introductory material. One of the things that I'm doing with our study in Proverbs this time is I am sort of merging two previous efforts at teaching Proverbs. So there's a problem with it. I thought, oh, this would be fun. I said, we want to talk about how to apply the Bible, and Proverbs is a good place to start. I said, good. I know I've got material on that. So then I find I've got two of them. And so I'm trying to dance between the two sets of notes and which to include and which to exclude and how to merge them together. And I feel like I'm a bit jumbled. And on this lesson, I sort of debated, should we do this or not, the poetry of Proverbs? I said in the notes here, our study today may sound like an English lesson. Sorry about that. Proverbs is poetry, but poetry of a particular kind. It is Hebrew poetry. So, of course, the Psalms is the same way, and the same is true of many of the prophetical books that are written in poetry. It's important for us to understand that we are reading poetry when we're reading those passages. Not all Bibles will lay it out as if it is poetry. We think of poetry of line by line, and so sometimes we miss that this is a poetical form, and so we're to interpret it in certain ways. So I thought I should spend a little bit of time talking about the form, so that when you're looking at the Proverbs, you will think poetry when you're thinking about what it means. All right, so let's move on. On Hebrew poetry, I have three quotes. I can't remember if I put them in your notes. So Robert Alter said, the best words in the best order. So their emphasis with Hebrew poetry is on the words and getting a memorable way of putting things. Dan Phillips says, Hebrew poetry is the development of ideas in a creative, educative, evocative way. And a little more full one comes from Bruce Waltke. He says, Hebrew poetry, like all poetry, tends to be more terse, more concise than prose. Certainly than more concise than preachers' sermons. And the relationships and transitions between lines tend to be unexpressed. In Proverbs, terseness becomes even more acute. It is the hallmark of its lines. The sage teaches truth through aphorisms, that's a big word, he defines it, a terse formation of a truth. There are also epigrams, a terse, sage, witty, and often paradoxical saying. They concentrate or distill truth, and so by their nature cannot express the whole truth about a topic. So you take an individual proverb that you find in the book of Proverbs, and you understand what it's saying, but that is not all there is to say about that topic. That's what he's saying. It is very brief, it is terse, and it is meant to communicate in a certain way. Now, these are just a few quotes. Let's move on to the next thing. Don't want to spend a lot of time on those quotes. So it is unlike English poetry. The chief characteristic of English poetry is that it emphasizes rhyme and meter, usually. Nowadays, it seems like all of that has gone out the window. I've read some of the poems that have been written by the leading poets of Canada these days, and it seems like everything else, there are no rules. There is no rhyme. There is no meter. There is nothing, and there isn't even the wisdom that you find in the book of Proverbs, so I don't know why we even bother reading it. You know, it seems like quite odd. All right. The chief characteristic, however, of Hebrew poetry is parallelism of thought. So I've often said that in English poetry we rhyme with words. In Hebrew poetry, they rhyme with thoughts. Okay, so the thoughts are meant to rhyme, or at least correspond in some way. We'll see that they don't always, they're not exactly, they are parallel thoughts, but they're not always exactly the same thought in each line. Okay, so we'll look at that in just a minute. All right, and so then imagery. The purpose of imagery is to arrest attention. And so I've given you all those things in the blanks. The letters that are red, those are supposed to fill out your blanks. I'm going to give you some examples here of the picturesque language of Hebrews, just a few passages. Proverbs 1, verse of Hebrews. I'm still in Hebrews. Proverbs 1, verses 8 and 9. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. So he used the term earlier, one of the definitions talks about evocative language. So this evokes an image. What is your father's instruction? Well, it is, and your mother's teaching. That's a parallel. They are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. They are something that will make you stand out and be honored and be well thought of. And so that image is given to us. Proverbs 2, verses 3 and 4. For if you cry for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasure. So here wisdom is being thought of, or discernment is being thought of, as something very valuable to seek out. Like, even as you would, when they seek out silver, it is hard work. You have to mine into the rock. You have to find that thread, that vein of silver, and chip away all the dross to get that that precious substance. Well, that's the idea here. That's what you are doing. If you're trying to learn how to be wise and to be discerning, this arrests our attention if we think about what this means. And then the last one, Proverbs 15:4, a soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. It's sort of like James. He talks about the tongue is a little vessel, but it can light a forest afire, and it can also cause great blessing. So that proverb, but you see, very brief. The soothing tongue is a tree of life. Okay? But perversion in it crushes the spirit. And don't we know that's true? Have we not done that? Both sides. Right? So, that's wisdom. That's the wisdom of Proverbs. And the language of it is meant to, this image arrests our attention. And as I've said, one of the problems I think we have in reading Proverbs is that we read it all at once. I mean, I have a Bible reading program, and I'm getting Bible reading problem. Yes, I have that too. Okay, I have a Bible reading program. I'm reading through. I'm doing the chronological study this year. We did Proverbs about a month ago in that program, right? So you go Proverbs 1 through 9 is fairly good because it's they're all connected together and they have a theme. And then you start hitting chapter 10 and 11 and 12 and it's proverb after proverb after proverb. But the thing is, you're reading them all at once in a program like that. And you might hit one that really speaks to your heart today. And you think, okay, I gotta remember that. But then I gotta finish my Bible reading program for the day. I've got 4 chapters of Proverbs to read today. I got to remember that one. And I read through, by the time I've read through 4 chapters of Proverbs, I have read probably over 100 different Proverbs. And that one that struck my mind is out the window. So I think on a personal level, there's nothing wrong. There's 2 different ways you can do it. One is doing those thematic studies. So say you study on anger, or you study on the tongue, or you study on some topic, and you work your way through Proverbs and think about what Proverbs says about that. That's one way. Or another way is to just simply say, I'm going to take a proverb a day. I'm going to make that a meditation for today. Think about, what are the implications of this proverb? What does it mean to me? Or what does it mean, first of all? Not so much what does it mean to me, but what does it mean and how does it apply to me, is what I should say. Okay? So the one problem we have is we read too much of it at once, I think. And we do need to sort of slow down. All right, so now I want to talk about the wide variety of images here, different figures of speech. So I'm going to see, now I have not given you any blanks for this section. This part is no blank, so don't worry if you're not getting anything on your sheet. I'm going to see if you can sort of identify the figure of speech. This is not a test, so don't get any test anxiety. But let's just listen to this one. Here's Proverbs 26, verses 18 to 19. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, was I not joking? All right, Christy. Not hyperbole, no, it's not that one. There's a key word in this word that will, in this one that'll tell you. Jill? Simile. Simile, there you go, the word like. That's the one that's a giveaway right there, right? So that is a simile. Now, by the way, I should note, and I don't think I mentioned this earlier, if you notice here the way this is laid out, I'm copying out of the New American Standard, you'll notice that they have a capital at firebrands. They have a capital in the second verse at and. So that is the way, like I'm just copying and pasting out of a Bible program, but those capitals indicate where the line break should be. So if you have your, if you have a printed Bible, it will have those lines laid out for you. There is a value to having the lines laid out like that, because you then are, your mind automatically starts comparing the couplet. You start thinking about what he's trying to do with this couplet. So I just point that out. That's a little extra as well. But okay, assimilate. So here's the next one. As a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion.
Metaphor.
Metaphor. Okay. Wow, very good. All right. Got a couple with gold stars so far. Okay, so those are the key things. The word as is part of this. Often it's used with a simile. These two are very confusing. Simile says one thing is like another thing. A metaphor says one thing is another thing. All right. So is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. Okay. So you got the ring of gold and the swine snout, and a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. Okay. And you can think of probably examples of that. Okay. All right. Here's another one I'll give you. See if you can. This one's might be a little harder. Okay. A longer section. Know well the condition of your flocks and pay attention to your herds. For riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. When the grass appears, the new growth is seen, and the herbs of the mountains are gathered in. The lambs will be for your clothing, the goats will bring the price of a field, and there will be goat's milk enough for your food, for the food of your household, and the sustenance for your maidens. So what is this one? This one's not as quite as easy to see. What is he talking about? What's the subject? How many riches? Did you?
Yeah.
Riches? Okay, you're on that way. So notice the part that I've got bolded. Riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. Now, in the context, he's talking about knowing the condition of your flocks, knowing about your fields, knowing about your lambs, knowing about your goats, and making provision. But what's the comparison that is made in verse 24? Riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure for all generations.
That nothing lasts forever.
Nothing lasts forever, so that's the general theme. But what? Who is he talking to here? He's talking to the king. Look, pay attention to your administration. Pay attention to your fields, your country. So this is an allegory. All right. So he's making an allegory. He's talking to doesn't have to be a king in that sense. He's talking about a king here, but you have responsibilities in life. Nothing lasts forever. You need to provide for your old age. You need to provide for your family. You need to provide for your household. So this wisdom speaks to that. All right. And any comments? Are we doing okay? You understand what I'm saying? I don't always understand what I'm saying, so I want to make sure you do. All right, so here's another one. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out her seven pillars. This one actually goes on right through the next section of this chapter. What would we call this?
Personification.
Oh, there we go. Personification. Okay. All right, personification. And we do see this in Proverbs a lot. Wisdom is personified as a woman. Also, folly is. Okay? So that's a way. And this arrests attention. So the loose woman in Proverbs is foolishness. Okay? Sinfulness. The wise woman, she has built her house. She has hewn out her seven pillars. You can read that whole passage. Chapter 9 is actually quite a beautiful expression of what wisdom is. Now, these last ones, these are different. These are two opposites, really. The first one, the words of Agur, the son of Jacob, the oracle. The man declares to Ithiel and Ukal, surely I am more stupid than any man, and I do not have the understanding of a man. All right, so what is that statement? What kind of statement is that? Eger says this is him. Emily?
Self-deprecation.
Self-deprecation, yes, he is. So he's overstating the case. He's probably, if he can write, he's probably not stupider than anybody else, right? He's trying to emphasize. Right, look at the other one. This is Proverbs 24:23. These also are sayings of the wise. To show partiality in judgment is not good. Okay, so what's that one? The first one is overstatement. The second one is understatement. To show partiality in judgment is not just not good, right? It's really bad. Okay, so he's going to rush your tape. Wait a minute, not good. He wants you to think about that. Okay, so there are others, including irony, anthropomorphism, synecdoche. That means the part for the whole. So if you'll talk about the gray head, what is the gray? When you're talking about the gray head, does something in Proverbs. Who's he talking about?
Good.
The old man. Okay, I resemble that remark. All right, so. And then metonymy, so an associated item. We just saw that in that passage about nor does a crown endure for all generations. Metonymy is an associated item. The crown stands for the king, right? Obviously, you could say the king, but he uses the word crown for that. All right, Lee.
So you talking about allegory. When I look at Ezekiel 28, the lamentation for the king of Tyre, in the New King James, they at least format it the same.
Yes.
Is it a similar type of?
It is often there. I'm not sure I would want to call that one an allegory. But I'd have to look at it more closely to really get a sense of that one. All right. So, but yes, when you're interpreting Ezekiel or you're interpreting Isaiah, keep in mind that these are this is poetry most of the time. And one of the things I find in reading that is, if I don't have my Bible formatted as poetry, I have to remind myself this is poetry. Because I sometimes misunderstand the point of the verse because I'm reading it like I'm reading prose. So a prose, if way back in English, 101, we were taught you make a paragraph, you're writing an article or something, you make a paragraph, the first sentence is supposed to say everything that your paragraph is going to say. Then every sentence underneath it is supposed to be related to that first sentence. And then when you move to a new subject, you start a new paragraph. All right, so there we are, we've got our Bible, and if it's not laid out in poetry format, we start thinking, oh yeah, so he's got a thesis statement here, and he's supporting it with this, this, and this, and this. But that's not always the case. Sometimes he's got a statement here, and he's got the next statement, and they're meant to contrast, or compare, or be parallel in some way. And they're both pointing to one point, not two separate points. Okay, so that helps us in understanding the Bible. Okay, all right, any other questions before I move on to the next thing? All right, I guess I do have a long quote that I had in my notes. I think I put this in your notes. This is from Dan Phillips. By the way, God's Wisdom in Proverbs, Dan Phillips' book, is a worthwhile book to get for studying Proverbs. I really like it. All right, in reading Proverbs, you'll find word pictures to your imagination's delight. You'll cringe from crucibles, flee from whirlwinds, wince at thorns, dodge arrows, shiver in snow, and sweat in heat. You'll plunge your hands in gold and silver and jewels. You'll drink or run from fountains and springs, pluck fruit off trees, and luxuriate in exotic fragrances and spices. You'll behold both feasts and famine, rooftops and deserts. You'll ponder ants and lions and conies and roosters and snakes and eagles and vultures. So he's bringing those images in. He's talking about this is what you're going to see in Proverbs. Now, here's the big thing that I want to talk about next. Is the types of parallelism in Proverbs. And how are we doing here on our time? We're okay. We're good. Okay. I'm so rattled. I knew that the morning message would be long. And I normally prefer to stay in one passage, as you know, and just deal with that one passage. But there was so much I wanted to say about this covenant thing. I knew it would be terrible. It's got me all rattled for the day. All right, so types of parallelism. All right, let's see. The first one is synonymous parallelism. Synonymous Proverbs. Line B rewords the thought of line A. Okay? So I'm going to just give you some examples. And I have laid them out parallel like poetry here. So the generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will himself be watered. Okay, do you see the parallel thoughts? The generous man, he will be prospered. The man who waters, he himself will be watered. So they're both, those both points talking about the same idea. Synonymous parallelism. Right, here's another example. And I think I just did two examples for this one. How much better it is to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding is to be chosen above silver. So he changes the image in the second line, but it's the exact same idea. Okay? And that synonymous parallelism emphasizes the point he's making. Okay, so sometimes you'll see that. You will see this in the Psalms, you'll see this in the Proverbs as well. They both are set up this way, but Proverbs is especially pithy about the way it does this. All right, so what else do I want to see? Oh, one other comment here in my notes. The echo, so line B, is often more specific than line A. So there will be a parallel thought, but he'll sort of sometimes enhance it. These examples I don't think do that, but some of them will be more, the second line will be fuller. Same idea, but a little fuller idea. All right. By the way, if you have questions as we go along, or a comment, just wave your hand and I might see you. All right, next one. Contrast or antithesis. So here it's line A, but line B. Okay? Line A, but line B. So here's some examples. Proverbs 10, verse 1. A wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother. Now, it's a grief to both of them, or it's a joy to both of them, right? But he's just using that parallel. Okay, a wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother. So a very big point. That's a big point in Proverbs, by the way. The Proverbs is written to the son. And with the image we have is Solomon writing to his son. And if he's talking about Rehoboam, it didn't work that well. But it was, but that's the whole idea, all right? And there's a beautiful, the whole book is organized around this thing. So this wisdom, son, listen to me, listen to what I'm saying. Take in these words. All right, so here's one of the words about that. Next example. Poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. So there's a contrast. You're going to be sloppy and slovenly and not do good work. You're not going to get paid, right? People will figure out, oh, you're one of those. They won't hire you again. The hand of the diligent makes rich. Okay? All right. And then, do I have another example? Yes. Okay, a sated man loathes honey, but to a famished man, any bitter thing is sweet. All right, so when you get up from lunch and somebody offers you, your favorite dessert, what do you say? Oh, I'll eat it, yes. Or are you sated? Like, say you've really had a big meal. And then they come up with dessert. It's like, oh, I don't even look at that, right? But if I'm famished, you can even feed me eggplant. I mean, even, that's about as low as you can get, but I would eat it if I had nothing else. All right, Christy.
It's the picky children at the dinner table.
True hunger is. That's right. They don't really know what true hunger is. Absolutely. And that was the philosophy behind the kids didn't want to eat something. Okay, we'll put it in the fridge. You get it for supper. And some kids are very stubborn. They might get it for breakfast, too. I don't know. After a while, they might learn. Or after a while, it starts growing mold. And you say, okay, I'll give you something new. I don't know. But that's the idea, right? You get the idea. Okay. Contrast. Any comments on that? A couple of things in the notes. The effect of this kind of proverb is to make a point startlingly clear by holding up opposites. And somebody else says it presents the same truth but from opposite directions. This one, This is from Tremper Longman. I don't like Tremper Longman because he's got some theological issues, but he says this. Proverbs is intent on presenting its readers with a fundamental choice in life, the choice between wisdom and folly. These antithetical proverbs are fleshing out the difference between the two. Wisdom is constructive, demands fear of the Lord, avoids proud talk, and does not lie. Folly, on the other hand, is destructive, despises the Lord, brags, and lies. Antithetical parallelism supports the worldview and message of Proverbs as a whole. So as we look at these things, by the way, one of the reasons that we recommend Christians use Proverbs is to develop a Bible-centered worldview, a Bible-centered mind, so that you are beginning to think the way God thinks. If you memorize Proverbs, you will find that there are life situations where those Proverbs come to play in your life. Lee, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, even that Proverbs 10:4, he who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of a diligent makes rich.
Yes.
Like, having a biblical worldview, that makes sense, but the world is not, doesn't have a biblical worldview. And they'll buck against that, too.
Yes.
You see, like, the opposite of that somehow being promoted and pushed.
Yeah.
They wonder why they don't succeed in certain areas. You know, like, why is this failure happening?
Yeah.
Why is this blowing up in the face?
Yes.
Like, but there's still, like, a push against this wisdom.
Oh, certainly. In the flesh, there's guys that are out there, and they are always cutting corners. Like, if you hire a contractor, and there's some guys that they're not going to do it quite right because it's cheaper to do it just a little bit off, right? And then they develop a reputation, and then the people, you know, they're always having to get new clients because, you know, they're not quite right. Remember when we had to re-roof the church? We looked in the Yellow Pages, found this guy. He came over and there were some things, and we were sort of agreeing to, you know, get him to do the job. And then we gave him a deposit. And then we heard some things about him, and we started investigating. And some government body said, well, I can't tell you anything about him, but I would recommend you be very careful. And then we said, oh, okay. So we canceled the deal and lost the deposit. It cost us an extra, whatever it was, $500,000 because this guy was, he had a lot of problems. And so we got a different company, and they did a great job. But anyway, so these are things to be aware of. That's moving on now. Let's get to the next one. Yes. No, go ahead. I'll back up. There you go. Which one?
Yeah, that Proverbs 27, verse 7.
Yes.
I don't think it's applicable to your situation. Because like Paul said, that we should not eat anything sacrificed to idol.
Right.
Even if I'm dead hungry, and
yes,
I get to that place,
right,
I will still say no.
Well, that's absolutely right. But that's right. I agree with you on that. But that's not what this proverb is pointing at. He's not saying this is a universal thing. If you're absolutely starving, you can eat anything. That's true. There are some things that even then a Christian shouldn't eat. You're right. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. Comparison. Line A is like line B. And I have two examples for this one. Like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy one to those who send him. Okay? We often... Okay, I was going to illustrate it with my own kids. I'll illustrate it with myself. I remember my dad would give me a job. Don, I want you to do whatever, you know, before I come home. He'd come home, and was it done? No. Didn't I tell you? Oh, I forgot. That's what I always said. And his line was, there's no such thing as forgetting. There isn't. I was just lazy. Right? And like that made him mad. Vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes. Okay? So don't be lazy. Get the job done, right? Okay. But that, you get the comparison. Okay, so now, like a madman, read this one earlier, and I now have put it in poetic form. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, was I not joking? Now, we do like joking, But there are some jokes that go too far, don't they? And, my wife's family was very famous for some of their deceptive joking, I would have to say. And I would quote this verse to my wife. I don't know. I hope she's learned that lesson, but I'm not sure if she has totally yet. Okay? But it says, what are you like when you're deceiving somebody to make a joke? Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death. I emphasize death. Okay? So, practical jokes, okay. You know, certain extent, it's okay. Just be careful with me, because I might throw that verse at you. Okay? All right.
Well, that one's, I mean, deception is the problem, and then saying it was a joke.
Yeah.
That's
a way to get out of things, isn't it? Oh, I was just joking. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, joking by itself.
Yeah, well, it would be bad because hopefully not because I'm doing it all the time, as you know. Okay?
But I think some people usually hide somebody April Fool.
Yes, exactly. April Fool is not my favorite day. I really, oh man, you're right. Okay, so go ahead.
That's like what John MacArthur says there, or whoever wrote it. Says, serious damage done by deceit cannot be dismissed as a joke.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, so joking is fine to joke. And there's even jokes in the Bible. You see, there's senses of humor. There's things that God says. God can be sarcastic, okay, Paul, and so forth, but not deceptive. Okay, so let's see. What else I want to say on this? Okay, so the next one is satirical. Some uses humorous satire to arrest attention. So the first one. First example has satire in line A. A lazy man does not roast his prey, but the precious possession of a man is diligence. So it's a comparison proverb, but there's also satire. A lazy man does not roast his prey. He's caught his prey, but he's too lazy. Oh well, I'm not going to cook it. I'm just going to let it rot. That's the idea. But the precious possession of a man is diligent. So you get quite a contrast there, but he's using satire to create the image. And then here's one where satire is in both lines. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish, but will not even bring it back to his mouth. So here's the guy sitting at the table, and he is so lazy. He puts his hand in there, but I just can't be bothered to even bring the food up to my mouth. I'm so lazy. That's the idea. That's the picture, and that's the satire. Okay? Can't hardly imagine somebody like that. You know, I can understand somebody who doesn't like something not bringing it back up to his mouth, but just being so lazy is not eat, right, Lee?
Yeah, or you can give it a great opportunity and you let it just slip away. You
know? Yeah, I know. That's where this is the application. Yeah, you've been given a great opportunity. Say there's a really great job offer, and you say, yeah, I'll think about it. Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, and then you wait too long and somebody else has got it. Right? So that's a good application of that. All right, any other comments on this? Okay, so let's go to where are we at? We got a few more. Okay. Oh, I better hurry up, actually. Okay, evaluation. Line A is better than line B. Okay? Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. Okay, so there are several proverbs like this in the Proverbs, emphasizing that the relationship with the Lord is far more important than wealth. You know, wealth can be helpful, but it is not the main thing. Okay? Evaluation. Okay, I'm going to move quickly here on these next ones. Consequence. Line B happens when you do line A. So, everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Assuredly, he will not be unpunished. Okay? So, if somebody is proud in heart, they will receive their punishment. Here's another example. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. Actually, I should have three lines there, I think. Okay. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. And do we not see that as true? People who are really good at something, they gain opportunities in life that others do not gain. Right? So, that wisdom says, pursue the skill of work for the glory of God. All right. Moving on. One more, I think. Two more. Okay, come on now. synthetic. Line B builds on or extends line A. Line A, so you could put it this way. Line A, and then what's more, line B. So let me show what I mean. Leave the presence of a fool, or you will not discern the words of knowledge. So both of those, there's sort of a contrast here, but it's, he's building on the two steps. What's more, line B, or you will not discern the words of knowledge. Okay, leave the presence of a fool. Don't walk with that guy. Or you will not, you won't be able to gain knowledge yourself. The longer you walk with a fool, the less you can gain knowledge. Okay, so lots of wisdom in this. Proverbs 15:1, the eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good. So the first statement, the eyes of the Lord are everywhere. Okay, we talk about the omnipresence of God, but watching the evil and the good. Now he's saying specifically, God sees this and he sees this. He sees the evil, he sees the good, he sees everything. But he's specifically building on that. Okay, then the last one is proverbial discourse. So I don't have an example here. Protracted didactic teaching poems. So we find most of these chiefly found in Proverbs 1 through 9. So if you go through those chapters, they read more like an ongoing essay. Now they are all in poetical form, but he's going on. He'll spend a long time talking about the strange woman. He'll spend a long time talking about the wise woman. He's contrasting the two for my son, work through all these things. I'm just going to mention in this protracted didactic teaching, if we take Proverbs as a whole, the message is to my son. There's the appeal, choose wisdom, avoid folly. So then we get to the very end of Proverbs, the Proverbs 31 woman, which many women feel very intimidated by, but they should not feel this. The point of that passage is not to make women feel small. The point of that passage, the very center of that passage, is the verse, her husband does safely trust in her. What is the point? My son choose wisdom. Look at who my son married. That's the point of Proverbs. Okay, so the whole thing is to teach you something. And it's a remarkable book. Okay, any last questions before we finish up? Okay, so we'll have more applicational lessons after this. I think we're done with introductory studies on Proverbs. Let's have a word of prayer. Father, we thank you so much for this time to consider how your word is organized. Help us to be faithful to teach and preach this word, to live this word, and to be your servants. In Jesus' name, amen.